Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Moed Katan Daf Chav Zayin. We're going to learn two lines from the top with the words Tanur Rabbanan. We're learning today Lila Nishmas Charlotte Lukin. Aleha Shalom, I do not have her Hebrew name. And today's the yard site also of Mr. Bernard Weisholz. His name is Ben Zion Ben Baruch Mordechai. That's Jake Weisholz's father. All the Shalms we learned for should have an Aliyah from our learning. We begin Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, two lines on the top, with another Braisa discussing more details of Avelus. Tanur Rabban, we learn the Braisa. May Emosai Kofin Es Hamitos. At what point do you have to do Kfiyas Hamita? We said their beds in those days, part of the Avelus process was that you overturn the beds. This isn't applicable nowadays, our beds are different, but they would overturn their beds. At what point does the Avelus formally start? And you're no longer in the Aninus period of time in terms of this din that you can no longer sit on an upright bed, sleep on an upright bed, but you have to sleep on these overturned beds. Rabbi Eliezer's shita is that as soon as Mishayetze, Rashi in the Ksiviyad says, Hames, as soon as the mace leaves the house, so at that moment in time, even though the mace hasn't been buried yet, you haven't had the Leviathan necessarily, you haven't had any part of the formal burial process beginning. Nevertheless, as soon as the mace leaves the house, Rabbi Eliezer says, that's already when you have to do Kfiyas Hamita. Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. His famous Bali Plukta, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, Yeshua Omer, Mishayisosem HaGolel. Now, throughout Shas, we have a machlok, is what Golel is. Rashi basically says that this is the coffin. So when you close the lid on the coffin, even though the burial hasn't yet occurred, but you're closing the lid on the coffin, that's when the Avelus starts, and you have to go do Kriyas Hamita. Others explain that it means when you bury the person, whatever you're actually putting down, you can see this in the Rabbeinu Chananel, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Mishi Yisosim HaGolel, V'kayim Alon Kriy Yeshua. We said we pass like Kriy Yeshua in this situation. The Ein Avelus Noheges, the Avelus doesn't start, Ella Mishi Yikaver HaMeis, when the mace is actually buried, Yisosim HaGolel, and you cover up the mace in the ground. So at that moment in time, that's when the Avelus starts. That's how we Halacha L'Maisa Paskin, like Rabbi Yoshua. So this is a machlokus, Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua, as to when the Avelus starts. Maisa Shahoya, to see how we pask this. Maisa Shemais Rabban Gamliel Hazaki. Now that's the girsa that we have, that this is Rabban Gamliel Hazaki. Now the only problem with this is Rabban Gamliel Hazaki was two generations ahead of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. And it would be unlikely that they would paskin when they were so young for the Gadol Hador. So many delete the word Hazakin over here and say that this is actually the contemporary of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. This is the famous Rabban Gamliel who was involved in the Sechsoch with Rabbi Yeshua on three separate occasions. He was ultimately deposed and they put in Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Oso Ayom, we have throughout Shas on that day. He was also the brother-in-law of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer married the sister of Rabban Gamliel. In any event, it's more likely that that's who this Rabban Gamliel was. And Nebuch, when he passed away, he was the Nasi, he was the Gadol Hador. So when he passed away, they went to go and ask a Shaila as to when the Avelu should start, when the Kriyas Hamita start. So Kivin Shiyotzu Pesach Beiso, as soon as the Niftar, Rabban Gamliel, was taken out of the house, so Amalim Rabbi Eliezer paskin for them and said, Kofu mitosechem, go overturn your beds, the Avelus has started. The Kivin Shenista Magolel, after the actual burial occurred, when they buried Rabban Gamliel and they put either the coffin lid into the ground and covered him up, or they started putting the dirt on the top of his body, so then Rabbi Yeshua passing for them, Amalim Rabbi Yeshua, Kofu mitosechem, now is the time that you have to do Kviyas Hamita. However, they said, Amalim, they said to Rabbi Yeshua, Kvar Kofinu Api Zokin, we've already done Kviyas Hamita based upon the opinion of the Zokin, meaning Rabbi Eliezer. But in any event, we do passing like Rabbi Yeshua. Another braisa, Tanur Rabbanan, Me'emasai Zokvin Es Hamitos B'Erev Shabbos. We previously learned, and you can see this in the Ksiv Riyad Rashi, where he says that there's a mitzvah, the Amrina Le'el, Priyas Harosh Uzekifas Hamitos B'Erev Shabbos mitzvah, that we have an obligation. You can't go around, we had said the three things, Pachas, which was a mnemonic we said for Priyas Harosh, Chazaras Keral Yachorov, and Sekifas Hamita, that you must do these things on Shabbos. You can't have these things still existing on Shabbos because they'll be practicing Avelus, but for Hesi on Shabbos, which you're not allowed to do. So this Zekifas Hamita, that you must return your beds to the upright status. When do you do this? You can't do this on Shabbos. You have to do this on Erev Shabbos. When do you do this on Erev Shabbos? So the Braisa says, Min HaMincha Ulamala. You do this from the Mincha time and onwards. Most suggest that this is the Mincha Ketana period of time. The Mincha Ketana is 2.5 hours before the Shkia. You then have Plaka Mincha, which is 1 hour and 50 minutes, halachic hours before the Shkia. So around that time, the bottom line is that you need to do it sometimes before Shabbos starts. So this is considered the appropriate time. That's when the Avelim, so to say, get up on Erev Shabbos and prepare for Shabbos. So you do this from Minha Mincha, usually Mincha Ketana Ulamal. Amar Rabba Barhuna, Aval Pikein, and a Yoshev Aleh, Achet Techshat. It says, even though you do this Kifa Samita, that doesn't give the Avelim the right to go sit on these upright beds. Well, for us, there would be that the Avelim no longer sit on the low chairs. So you have to sit on the low chairs all the way up until Shabbos. The Avelus still is in existence. You're allowed to start preparing for Shabbos, to be ready for Shabbos, but you're still not allowed to sit on an upright bed, or what we would say would be the regular sized chairs, until Shabbos actually starts. Similarly, the same question, the Braisa asks, Ulamatzi Shabbos, Apa Pish Ein Lo, Leishev Eliyom Echod, Chozev Ekofer. And Matzi Shabbos, even though the Avelis, for example, is getting up on Sunday, so if the Avelis was ending on Shabbos morning, so then, of course, you don't have to redo the Kviya Samita on Matzi Shabbos. But here, the Avelis is ending on Sunday morning, so you still, nevertheless, after Matzi Shabbos starts, Shabbos is over, you have to redo the Kriya Samita in this situation. All the other applications in the Avela still apply. Chozer v'kofer, you have to go and redo the Kriya Samita. Because even though we say Mikzas Yom Kikulo, that's, we pointed out previously, is only in the morning. So we don't say Mikzas Yom Kikulo, just leave it a little bit Motzei Shabbos, and then we're done. No, we have to wait till the morning. Mikzas Yom Kikulo means once you start Sunday morning, they just have a Shachris, and then the minute gets, after Shachris, everybody gets up, but that means you have to have the beds overturned, and all the other Hanhagos of the Shiva are applicable still on Motzei Shabbos up until Sunday morning when you say Mikzas Yom Kikulo. Another bright, so Tana Rabbanan, HaKofer Mitaso, Lo Mitaso Bavad Hu Kofer, El Komito Shiesh Lo Besoch Beso Hu Kofer. When you have this obligation to overturn the beds, so it's not only your own bed that you're sleeping in, but the bright, it tells us every single bed in your house, some suggest every single bed that you own, even in other houses, Kol Mito Shiesh Lo Besoch Beso, any beds that you have in your house, so you have to go and overturn them. Again, it's not applicable nowadays, but again, the idea is that this is part of the demonstration that you are in Avelus, overturning all the beds. And the Braisa continues, says, even Afil Yeshlo Esemitos Besar Makomos, if you have 10 beds in different rooms, or some suggest even in different houses, Kofa is cool, and you have to go and overturn all of them, even if you're not sleeping on them. Now, if you have guests in your house that are sleeping over that are not in Avela, so they don't have to overturn their beds. But any bed that is not being used by someone, a guest, who's not chayiv in Avelus, but is just in your house, so this Bryce says you have to overturn it. And he says, for example, Afilu Chamisha Achen Umeis Echad Kulan Kofit. He says, Nebuch, the five brothers and one of them passed away, so then they're all living, the other four brothers living in their separate houses. Everyone has to go and do Kviyas Amita in their respective houses or in their respective places where they have beds. The Moisa Mita Hamuchelis Lekalim, however, ain't Sarach Lechaposa. But if you have a bed that wasn't used for sleeping purposes, but the bed was like a decorative bed, it was for storage purposes, you would put utensils on it, you stored various things on it, you have knickknacks on it, so then ain't Sarach Lechaposa, then this is not included in Dinah Kriya Samita. Kriya Samita was only for beds that you slept on or sat on. Now, Raisa says one more additional din, dargush. We'll explain in a moment, a dargush is either some sort of a decorative type of a bed, or we'll see that it was a leather type of a bed. We'll talk about what dargush is in a moment. Ein tzorach lechafoso. Since it's not a bed that was used for sleeping, it didn't have to be overturned. However, elo zokfo, since it could be used under certain circumstances for sleeping, so you had to stand it upright. Now, you didn't overturn it because it just wasn't done that way with this dargush. But it was stood up on its end, so it was, again, this was the Kviya Samita for the Dargish, is to stand it up on one end. That is the opinion of the Tanakhama. Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, Dargish matir es karbitov v'unofa me'elav. He says, for the Dargish, all you have to do is go and untie the karbitov. The karbitov, Rashi and the Ksiviyat tells us, are luloso. These are loops that are holding the flat part of the bed to the sides of the bed, and we'll explain this more in the Gemara in a moment. So that's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion, is that you don't have to stand it up vertically, you just untie these loops that are holding up the flat part of the bed to the side of the bed, and the flat part will fall down, and that will accomplish the same thing as Kviyas Hamita, and you don't do this Zekifas, this standing upright, Zokvo of the Mita for the Dargish. So now the Gemara asks the obvious question, my dagish, what exactly is this dagish? So the first opinion that we bring forward is Ula. Amar Ula, it's something called Arsa Degada. Rashi in the Sivyat says, Mita Shein Adam Yoshev Aleha. It's a bed that people don't sleep on. Umiyuchedes lemazel. This was a good luck bed. This was a bed that was for decorative purposes to give the malach in charge of your house, or to say a place to stay. And it's a bed that wasn't used for sleeping purposes. That's why it didn't have to have the regular kfiyas hamita. That's what Ula says. Rabba questions this. Amalei Rabba. Rabba says, El Meyato, based upon what you're saying, then Gabe Melech, in regards to a king, where the Mishnah teaches us, Ditnan, Kolo Am Mesubim Ala Oritz, Hu Mesiv Al Hadargish, that when the king Nebuch is sitting Avelus, he's in mourning, and everybody else is sitting on the ground out of deference to the king, nevertheless the king is allowed to go and sit on this Dargish. Now, if you're telling me that the Dargish is a decorative bed, Miiko Midi, Da'ado Yidno Lo Osvine, Bahashto Mosvinen Le, so it doesn't make any sense that all year long, when he's not in Avelis, we don't let him sit on it. Nobody sits on this. It's a decorative bed for the mazel of the house. And now that he's in Avelis, now Bedavka, we should let him go and sit on it? That doesn't make any sense. So therefore, Rabbi says, Ula, your definition of Dargish is incorrect. So what would Ula answer to this? So Maskel Ravashi, Ravashi answers on his behalf and says to Rabbi, you're wrong. He says, my Kusha, what bothers you so much about Ula over here? There's no problem. Midi, Dahavi Achila Vishasiya. This is no different than the fact that we normally have the king eating and drinking his own food. And now during this Avelos, during the Suda Savrara, but Davka, he goes and has the food of other people. So therefore, it's not strange to say that normally he doesn't sit on this Dargish, but now during the Avelos, he does sit on the Dargish. This is just like the eating and drinking. What's that? That until now, he was eating his own food. We didn't go give the king food and drink. He would have his own food and drink. But Bedavka, now by the Suda Savra, we Bedavka give the king to eat and drink. So therefore, it's no different than normally he doesn't sit on the Dargish, but now he does sit on the Dargish. So therefore, Ula, what you're suggesting is correct, and Rabba's question on you is not a problem. So Gemara says, okay, Eli Kasha HaKasha. Okay, that's not the problem with Ula, but this is the problem with Ula. We know that there's some problem with Ula that was said by Rabba or someone else, and this is the problem. Now, the Gersa that we have is Ditnan, it's a Mishnah, but the Mesos HaShah says it should be Ditanya. It's a Braisa. Now, we had said this already. Dargish ainu tzarech lechafoso elozofa. This is the braisa we just brought down before that says that you don't have to totally overturn the dargish, but you just stand it up on one end. Now, if you're telling me that it's this arso de gada, that it's this decorative mazel type of a bed, vi arso de gada, so my ainu tzarech lechafoso. So, how come you don't have to overturn it? Are you going to tell me that because it's not slept upon? But again, Hotznan, we have what says Tanan, but really, again, the Mesorah Shah says it should be Tanya, it's a Braisa. Hot Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Kofi Mitosu, Lo Mitosu, Bavadu Kofi, El Kofi Mitosu, Yeso, Beso, Beso, Kofi. We just learned this before, that the Braisa said that it's not only the bed that you're sleeping on, but it's every bed in the house that you have to go and overturn. So if you're telling me over here that you don't have to overturn the Dargish, why not? It's a bed. Even though it's a decorative bed, it's a mazel dicker bed. Nevertheless, it's a bed, so why wouldn't you have to overturn it? So therefore, it must not be a bed. Where it says, no, also, my kasha, why is that a problem? Me, Ula's right. Me, did the havi amita, miuchedes lekelim. The dargish is the equivalent of the bed that we said doesn't need to be overturned. For example, the bed that was used to have kelim on it. It was a bed that you used for storage, so to say. You put knickknacks on it. You put all sorts of kelim and other utensils on it, which we said to Tanya, the bride said we just brought down. If it wasn't for sleeping purposes, then you didn't have to overturn it. And this dargish is not for sleeping purposes, and therefore you don't have to go and overturn it. So therefore, that's also not a kasha nula. We try one more time. Eli kasha, if there is a kasha nula, ha kasha, this is the kasha, and this one's going to shlug up Ula. And this one tells us, from the end of the braisa that we brought down, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, he had said that dargish was matir kabita, you loosened up these loops that were connecting the flat part of the bed, the part you slept on, to the sides of the bed, who know for me, and then the flat part of the bed, the part you sleep on, would fall down by itself. Now, that's not the way a dargish was set up. If you're going to tell me that arso de gada is this dargish, so then my kabita nisli, then the arso de gada, this decorative bed for good luck, did not have those loops. So therefore, Ula is wrong. So the Gemara says, so what is dargish? What then is the definition of this dargish? So we have the following interaction. Ki also Rabban came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, so one of the Rabbanim told him what dargish was. Amalei, how many Rabbanim? There was a certain Rav that spoke with Rabban. Who was this? Rav Tachlifa Bar Marav Shmei. He was known as Rav Tachlifa, who came from Eretz Yisrael, Bar Marav Shmei, that was his name. And he said, I was a regular person who was in the Gildoi market, that's Gildoi are the leather makers, and they had said over there that my dargish, I saw ditzlo. This is a special type of bed that has on the flat part where people sleep on, it's made out of leather, and this did have straps that would be able to be loosened, these loops that were connecting this leather sleeping part to the sides of the bed, so that's called arso ditzlo, and that is what a dargish is. Similarly, Itmar Nami, Amar Yirmi said similarly, he said the dargish is serugo mitocho, the mita serugo al gabo. He said the difference between a dargish and a regular bed is that the dargish has these loops that are inside of it, they're in the inner frame, as opposed to a regular bed that the frame part, the straps that they would have, the horizontal vertical straps that would hold up the part that they would actually sleep on, the mattress that they would sleep on, so they were from the top. So the structure of this Aristo Ditzolo was a little bit different. The straps were in the inside, connecting from the inside of the frame, as opposed to a regular bed where the straps would be connecting it from the top. So therefore, you see that this Aristo Ditzolo is a certain type of bed that if you just loosen these loops up and the flat leather part would fall down, so that's all you have to do, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and that is the definition of dargish. How do we paskin over here? Do you have to stand it upright, or can you just let down these straps and let it fall to the floor by loosening up the karbitin? So I'm Rabbi Yaakov Aracha, I'm Rabbi Shimon Levi, we paskin halachic Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that all you have to do is loosen up the karbitin, and the flat sleeping part will fall to the floor, and you don't have to stand this upright. Where it says, now, the Gersa that we have is Itmar Nami. The Mesoros HaShas tells us, however, that the Marsha is Mochek Zeh, and he says that the Gersa should be just Ve'omar. Okay, so Ve'omar of Yaakov Barach, Omar Vasi, another statement that Yaakov Barach said, and he said this one in the name of Ravasi, former one, he said in the name of Rishu Levi. So here he said in the name of Ravasi, Mita Shenaklitin Yotzin, Zokfav Vidayo. Now we've talked about Naklitin very much when we were learning the Gemara in Sukkah. The Naklitin is what we call a canopy bed, a bed that has a vertical post at the head and a vertical post at the foot, and then it had a small horizontal bar that ran from the top of the vertical head to the vertical foot of the bed, and they would then put a sheet or a canopy over this and hang it down on the sides. It would make it look like a V, an upturned V. And you can see diagrams of this in the art scroll next to footnote number 31 if you don't remember what this is. In any event, so you can't overturn this bed. This would be similar to our beds. You just can't overturn it. It wouldn't be functional. And therefore, all you have to do is turn it on its side. You stand it upright, soak for, and that's enough. That fulfills the obligation of Kfiyas Amita for such a Naklitin type of a bed. Another braisa, Tana Rabbanon, Yoshan Agabe Kisei Agabe Udyoni Gedola. Now that's the girsa that we had previously, and this braisa we had previously. If a person wants to fulfill the mitzvah, Kfiyas Amita, he cannot do so by just sitting on a chair, or this Odiani we said was a certain type of a structure known as a mortar, Machteshes, and the girsa that we had was Udyoni Gedola, a large mortar, but others changed the girsa around. You can see this over here in the Agos Agra, and they say Gabi Udiani, or lying down on this mortar, without saying it's a large mortar, but by definition it is, if you can hold your body on it. We had previously put a Sefer Torah on this Udiani as well. We had the case where he didn't want to sleep on the same bed that had the Sefer Torah, so he put the Sefer Torah on this Udiani. But here the Gers, according to the Gra, is Gedola Mizu, that this is going on the next statement, that even if a person slept on the floor, Agabi Karka, which is even a bigger Chiddush than sleeping on a low chair or on this mortar. So nevertheless, in all these situations, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah kfiyas amita, lo yotzi yedei chavoso kfiyas amita, and that's what Amar Yochan tells us, shlo kiyam kfiyas amita, when it says, lo yotzi yedei chavoso, then that you didn't do this mitzvah kfiyas amita. Yes, you're not allowed to sit on higher places, so you would fulfill not sitting on a higher place, but you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Kfiyas Hamita. Again, nowadays we don't do this Kfiyas Hamita, but we do sit on a low structure on the ground. Many people sit on the ground itself. Amongst the Svarim, they follow the opinion of the Ben Yoyada in many situations, the Ben Ishchai, that they sit within one tefach of the ground. They hold that that's still considered the ground, but more than one tefach, you're not considered the ground. But Ashkenazim usually follow the opinion that we use the rules of Lavud, that if you're within three tefachim of the ground, it's considered that if you're on the ground, and therefore we sit on low chairs or cushions that are more than one tefach, usually above the ground, but less than three tefachim. Again, three tefachim is about a foot. So if the chair or the structure you're sitting on is less than a foot from the ground, so then you consider as if you're sitting on the ground, and that is the way we practice to a certain extent this din of Kfiyas Hamita. Okay. Another raisa, Tana Rabbanon, mechabdin in the base Ovel, either the base Ovel himself or other people allowed to go be mechabdin, to go clean up the house, to sweep up the house. There's no mitzvah that the Ovel has to be in a disheveled house. He has certain hanhogos of avelos, but it doesn't mean he has to be in filth. So you're allowed to go and sweep up the dirt in the house. Omar Beitzin, they had dust floors, they had dirt floors, and they would water them down, like in the ball games when they water the infield at the seventh inning stretch or after the fifth inning, whenever they go and water the infield to get the dust to settle. So Omar Beitzin, they would either do it with water, or some places they would do it with wine. So you're either the Ovel himself or the people can do it for the Ovel, Beveis Ovel. That's not a problem. These aren't considered Malacha, that it would be also for the Ovel to do it himself, or to even have somebody to do it for him, because you're not allowed to have Malacha done for the Ovel, even if he doesn't do it himself. But these aren't considered Malacha. Likewise, Umeidichin, you're allowed to go and rinse off the karos, the dishes. So they had plates, so you're allowed to wash the dishes, the kosos and the cups, the tsluchis and the jugs, the ketonios, and other types of jugs. So you're allowed to go and rinse off the dishes, but they saw it's not a problem to wash the dishes. You don't have to let the dishes sit in the sink until the avelis is over. However, but you don't bring in mugmor is incense, abisomim or spices, the base oval to go and smell. This is not something that is appropriate in the base oval. You don't want it to have a beautiful, pleasant smell in the base oval. That's not the idea behind the avelus, and therefore you don't bring these things in, mugmor or abisomim, and light them and have an aromatic aroma going around in the base oval's house. More questions. It says, really? Ini? Votani bar kapara, bar kaparna. Bar kapara said, Eim avrachim, lo ala mugma, vlo ala besama veis avel. Baruch ha yudul amarachinan, ha asuya maisinan. Wait a second. Bar Kapara said that we don't make a bracha on the mugmar or the besamim in the beis avel. And that's because they weren't brought there, as we'll see, for the purposes of smelling. They were brought there for the purposes of covering up an odor. We'll see either from the mace nebuch that was there previously or was there still now. We'll see what we're talking about. Or because the people weren't bathing and showering because of the avelus. They didn't do rechitza, and therefore there may be odor in the house. So they would bring in mugmar or besamim, and the din that Bar Kapara says is you're allowed to go and have mugmar and besamim. Just don't make a bracha on it, because the purpose of this wasn't to smell it, it was to cover up an odor. When you're masking an odor, you don't make a brach on something. So, Baruch Yehuda L'Baruchinan. However, I suye my sinan, that you are allowed to go bring it in. So, this brisa that Bar Kapara brings down goes against the brisa, the Tana Rabbanan that we just said, the aim of Venus and Mugavis of Solomon Vesa Ovo. So, how do you reconcile the two? So, he says, no problem, Lokasha. They're talking about different scenarios. Habavis Ovel, Habavis Havanachamim. Talking about two scenarios. There are two different ways to learn this. The first one is that you're talking about while the mace is still there. If the mace is still there, so Nebuch, the mace could be decaying. The mace would be in the hot Mediterranean weather. The mace could decay and be very foul smelling. So, then you can bring in Mugmar and the summon to mask the odor, nebuch of the mace. It's not covered in mace, that there should be a smell there. So therefore, they would bring in something to mask the odor, and that's why you don't make a brach on it, but that's why you're allowed to bring it in. After the mace is taken out, and they only have menachamin over there, so then there is no longer a problem of a bad odor, and therefore now you can't bring in mugmar or besamim because it wouldn't be used to mask an odor, it would be to make it a pleasant odor, and that's inappropriate to do in the base oval. That's one way to understand this. Rashi in the Ksiv Yad, however, brings another way to understand this. And he says, Ein mevarchim, what does that mean? Kolmar b'motzei Shabbos. You don't make Havdalah with a bracha on the mugmar. You don't have besamim. You don't bring that into the base oval. That's the way Ksiv Yad Rashi understands this. And there's one other interpretation. That's, you see this in the Rabbeinu Chananel and also another pshat in the Ksiv Yad Rashi that we're dealing here. The difference is between the place where the actual mourners are and the people that are coming to go and comfort them. So that's the difference. The base Ovel, that refers to the actual room that the mourner himself was in. There you can't bring in the mugmar. That's inappropriate. But in the rest of the house where you have other menachemim, the people that are coming to be menachem, there you're allowed to have the mugmar and the besamim for their enjoyment. Okay. We now start the next Mishnah. Ein molichin lebeis so'evel, you don't bring to the house where the oval is food on the following, on these fancier trays, lo betavla, that's a certain type of a fancier tray, lo biskutla, is a larger type of a bowl. Rashi says it's a tamchui, it's like a big bowl that they would have. In the Ksiv Yad Rashi, he says that the tavla is a derech kovod, it's a very bechovodika type of a tray, and the skutla is a shulchan, katan, yofa, a very nice little table, or lishnachrina, that this is mida gedola, it's a large type of a measuring thing, shemodim b'chitin, that they normally would measure chitin with, and these are fancier types of items. And likewise, velo, you don't go and bring into the base ovel the food, for the Suda Savra, not in a konon. Rashi in the Ksiv Yad tells us that a konon is napa, a certain type of sieve, that you don't use that, a certain type of large basket, and as well, Ela B'Salem, you just bring the food in a plain, simple basket. That is the proper way. Shalo Kiderach Hashivus, Ksiv Yad Rashi tells us, you don't do it in a fancy way. And we'll see the reasons for this is not to embarrass anybody. There were people that were rich that could afford to have fancy things brought in. And then the poor people add insult to injury. It's bad enough they're sitting in avelas. Everybody sees that they're not wealthy, that they're bringing them in this cheap little, container. So therefore, it would be an additional busha to the poor people. So therefore, we level the playing field and everybody does it the same way, in the least fancy way. This way, nobody's embarrassed. And we'll see. The Gemara will talk about a whole bunch of takanos that the Chazal did to be very much aware not to embarrass people, not to add insult to injury. They're already in a bad state. And now, to demonstrate to everybody how poor they are. Okay, the Mishnah continues, says, Be'ein omrim birchas aveilim b'moed, on chol ha'moed, we don't go and say the bracha, the Sbirchas Aveilim. Again, I said previously, we're not really knowing to make this bracha nowadays, although we have remnants of it in the Suda Savra for some that have a special type of a benching. In any event, Ein Omrim Birchas Aveilim B'moed, we don't say on Chol HaMoed this bracha of the Birchas Aveilim. However, we even on Chol HaMoed, when we bury somebody, Aval Omdim B'Shura U'Menachem, and we set up the two rows, and the Aveilim walk by, or originally that the people would walk by the Aveilim, and we would be Menachem, then we say Amokim Menachem. And when you do this, you fulfilled the idea as well of going and paying a shiva call, so technically you didn't have to go back and pay a shiva call as well. And that's what Rashi in the Ksiv Yad says, Nos lehem rishus lelech miyad. They could leave. Ein tzorech lohosev ulevaruch birchas rechova. And they didn't have to go and continue paying a shiva call. They were yotzei by doing this on Chol HaMoed. So the Mishnah continues and it concludes. The Poach says, we likewise, we don't put the coffin down, Nebuch the Mita, where the person is dead, in the Rehov, where it was making his spadim. You don't do this on Chol HaMoed, Shalo Lahar Gilas Hesman, because you don't make Hespedim on Chol HaMoed. You say some Tilim, you have a very brief Levaya, and therefore, if you would put the mita down, people would stop and they would go in the normal eulogies that they would give because that's what normally was done. So we don't do this on Chol HaMoed in order not to have the eulogies. Likewise, Velo Shel Noshim Li'olam, we never put out the coffin of the woman in the public area, Mipnei HaKavod, in order to not have a disrespect to the women that would be menstruating, and those women would have blood coming from the coffin. They didn't have the same abilities to protect the covet of the women like we might have today with our coffins. And in any event, so the Gemara will say, so they did this for all women, not only women who were menstruating or women who had just given birth, they did this for all women, so they shouldn't embarrass those women that would Nebuch had needed this, so they did it for all women, so therefore there's no embarrassment involved. And the Gemara will discuss this idea, again, as I said before, a very important idea, and the and specific practices that the Gemara is going to mention about how important it is to preserve the covet of people. Start with the following brayso. Tanu Rabbanon, Barishona, Hayu O Molichin Bevei Soavel, Ashir Miklosel Shal Kesef Vishal Zov, Ani Misali Nitzorim Shal Rava Klufa. Originally, before the Takana of our Mishnah, what they did was the rich people that would bring them the food in all these very, very fancy gold and silver baskets. And the poor people, they would get it in a little twig basket, a Rava Klufa, a wicker type of basket, an interwoven type of basket made out of little twigs of wood. So, and they would be very embarrassed. They saw last week at the Levaya, the rich guy, they brought in these gold trays and these silver trays, and we get a little wicker basket over here. So, Hiskinu, so in order to protect the Aniyim from being embarrassed, so the rabbi set up the following Takonishu, Akol Mivin, Besali, Nitzorim, Shalom, Klufa, everybody got their food from the shul when they sent it, or the neighbors, they sent it, everybody sent it in the wicker basket. So this way the aniyim were not embarrassed. The rich guy that had the levaya last week and the poor guy that has the levaya this week, they have the exact same sudas havroah. When they bring them the food, everybody brings it in the most plain, simple baskets. Nobody's embarrassed. Very important idea. Talking about another bryce says the same thing. They would bring drinks to give to the Nebuch the Avelim in the house. So the rich people, they gave them this fancy crystal glass, zechuchas levana. And for the poor people, they got it in what they had was colored glasses. This would be a much cheaper, less expensive type of a glass. And the poor people never were embarrassed. Same thing like with the baskets here. The rich guys, they get the fancy crystal, and we get the paper cup. So therefore, the rabbi set up not to embarrass the poor people. So everybody was made, whether you're rich or poor, when they brought you the drinks, they brought you the wine, they brought you whatever they were bringing to the house of the avel. So everybody got it in the plain plastic cup. Everybody got it in the colored glass cups, which was an inferior type of a cup, and nobody was embarrassed. Similarly, they used to have open coffins. Strange thing for us, because we're very medactic not to have open coffins. The Goyim do this, but originally the practice was that, yeah, they would have an open coffin as well. And they would do this to demonstrate, look what a healthy person he was. Look at this person, how good he looked. What a shame, what a nebuch that he died. So this would increase the mourning. So by the rich people, well, they looked good because they were healthy in life, so they had the open coffin. But the poor people, Nebuch, who in their lifetime were starved and famished and didn't look so good in their life because they were, you know, not well fed, so they would not have an open coffin. They would keep the coffin closed with aniyim. And again, the aniyim would be embarrassed. Now, the reason why they did this is, as I said, because the poor people, their faces were blackened, their faces were emaciated because of the starvation that they had during their lifetime. So it was a bizayon to them to be seen like this as a mason. They covered them up. But it was even a bigger bizayon that they didn't cover up the rich people. And by definition, you're being embarrassed. If they covered you up, it meant you're demonstrating publicly that he's a poor person. Another way that the aniyim, unfortunately, were embarrassed. So therefore, again, the rabbanim came to make sure that the aniyim weren't embarrassed. People shouldn't be embarrassed. So they made a decree that everybody has a closed coffin, whether you're rich or poor. And this way, none of the poor people were embarrassed. And we have a similar idea. In terms of the coffins, we don't buy fancy pine oak coffins for thousands and thousands of dollars. Everybody has the most simple coffin. Again, the similar idea of not embarrassing the poor people. Mara continues with another bright sub. Rishona Yomotzi Mashirim Bidargish Vaniim, and we turn to Chavzayin Omibes Bekalicha. Others have the Girsa Bekliva. So again, the rich people that we brought out with this fancy dargish, and the poor people walked out, were brought out on a very simple coffin, a very simple mita. Again, the poor people were embarrassed. Again, it's bad enough somebody's dead. Now everybody has to know that we're poor. So again, the rabbis made one rule, iskinu shiua kol motzim bechliva, or bechlicha. So everybody has the same simple plain coffin in order that nobody should be embarrassed. They would put people who never died of GI diseases, of all sorts of diarrhea and other problems, so their body might not have the most pleasant odor. So they would, with Afka, only put mugmor, spices, and besamim, aromatic material, only underneath these people. So when you smell that, you knew that this guy died of diarrhea. So that were alive, chayim mizbaisim. So all the people, Nebuch, that had intestinal problems, so they were embarrassed. All right, this is what they're going to do for me when I pass away. All right, what a busha. So this was a terrible thing. So therefore, the rabbis were masaki, niskinu shumunichin tachas hakol. Everybody, they went and put these besamim, this mugmor, underneath everybody. So whether you had a bad odor or not from the diarrhea, the GI illness that you had in your lifetime, that Nebuch killed you, so this way, nobody was embarrassed. So the people that had GI disease while they were alive wouldn't be embarrassed. And when my time comes, everybody's gonna know that I had a diarrhea. Everybody is gonna know that I had a bad GI problem and had an odor about me. So therefore, this embarrassment was removed by doing this mugmor for everybody. Again, tremendously important idea. How much we have to take into account other people's embarrassment and to prevent it. Originally, when a woman's in Nida, Nebuch, she dies, so all the kalim that she was involved in, anything she sat on, anything that she was leaning on, etc., all the dinim of Tuma would be applicable, so they would go and be Tova, all the Kalim of a woman who died while she was in Nida. For Nidos, Chayos, Misbaisos, and all the women who were Nidos, so they would be embarrassed. Oh, everybody's going to know I'm a Nida. Everybody's going to see the fact that they have to be Tova, all the Kalim. So therefore, they were Misakin in order not to make them embarrassed. So that the women who are Nidos shouldn't be embarrassed. So they said they would do this for everybody. And therefore, the women won't have to worry that everybody's going to know and they're going to see that I sat on this and I had to be tovel it, etc. So therefore, we did it for everybody and there's no busha. Another b'risa, b'rishon matbilin agabe zavim mason, the similar idea with the nidos. So if somebody died while they were zav, a man or a woman, so again, they had to be tovel the kalim. So all the zavim that were alive, by zav chayim, mispaisa, said, oh, everybody's going to know. So therefore, iskinushim matbilin agabe yakob, b'nei kol d'shul zav chayim. So therefore, again, they did the same thing. We do this for everybody. And therefore, there's no embarrassment to people that have this condition, that they're zavim, they're not going to be embarrassed because they'll do this for everybody and it won't be such a busha for them. Finally, the writer says, "Barishona, haisa hotzas hames kosher lekrova yosem imisoso." Because of the expense of the funeral, so it was very, very difficult to go and have the fancy coffins and have all the fancy accoutrements, and it was very difficult for the relatives of the mace if they were poor. So what did they do? So atrayu krova menichnos obarchet. So they couldn't afford to do this, and they were embarrassed that they would do it in a very simple way, and it was a tremendous busha. So they Nebuch left their mace to be a mace mitzvah. They said, we can't take care of this properly. It's a busha, and therefore they didn't want to take care of it at all. So therefore, along comes Rabban Gamliel, and he makes the famous takona, which I alluded to before, that everybody's buried in the simplest coffin, not expensive. Achibara Gamliel, Benor Kalus Rosh, Ba'atzmo. So there's no better way to demonstrate something than do it yourself. So some suggest either Rabban Gamliel had prearranged his funeral, and he said at my funeral, and everybody's going to attend, he was the Nasi, so everybody's going to see that he's buried in the most simple plain coffin, even though Rangalil was wealthy and could afford to have a, you know, oak casket, a pine casket, all the fancy caskets. Nevertheless, it was buried in the most plain and simple coffin, the most plain and simple burial. So therefore, Rabbi Gamliel either did this for himself, he prearranged his own, or when he, Nebuch, had to go and bury one of his relatives, so he demonstrated to everybody else by making it the most simple and plain type of a coffin, and the most simple and plain types of tachrichim. So therefore, v'yotzeh b'chlei pishtan, he buried the mace, either, or he arranged for his own burial, that it would be in the most plain, simple linen tachrichim, the burial shrouds. V'nagu amachro l'seis b'chlei pishtan. And therefore, by this demonstration, everybody else said, well, if Rav Gamliel can do this, we're going to do this as well. And therefore, the rich and the poor, they all followed this example from Rav Gamliel and this concern that the poor people, they can't afford to do the funeral and they leave their mace unattended to, so that stopped. Amar Rav Papa, v'idinog alma afilu b'tzarda bar zuza. And Rav Papa said, this has continued to be the minog of Chai Yisrael, that when we bury people, the burial shrouds that we use the most simple type of material, and they can even use something called tzarda that's only worth a zuz, a very small amount of money. What is it, tzarda? So Rashi says it's kanbus, it's a cotton. It's a very simple type of material that's very, very inexpensive, and it can be bought for just a zuz, and even the poorest of people are able to do this, and we don't make any distinction between rich and poor. Everybody does it this way. No matter how rich you are, you bury yourself in the most simple type of tachrichim that everyone can afford in order not to embarrass the poor people and lead to, unfortunately, that the relatives can't go and bury their dead, and they leave them for the Nevuch HaMeis Mitzvah. Then we quote the Mishnah. It said, Eimen Iches HaMitah B'Rechov. We don't go and put the on Chol HaMoed, the coffin, out in the street, because that could lead to be Yargo, that you would go and have eulogies, which you're not allowed to have on Chol HaMoed. On the Rav Papa says, this doesn't apply when you're dealing with the Talmud Chacham. Ein Moed B'Vei Talmud Chacham. On Chol HaMoed, if the Talmud Chacham is buried, so then, in that situation, where the Talmud Chacham is there, Nebuch the Mita is there, so then you can stop and have eulogies for Talmud Chacham, and certainly, if you can do this on Chol HaMoed, the Kosher and Chanuk and Purim, which have similar dinim, that we don't have eulogies, but if you can do it on Chol HaMoed, then you can certainly do it on Chanuk and Purim as well for a Talmud Chacham. But this is only v'ani mili b'fanav, avo shalom b'fanav lo. That's if the Talmud Chacham is there. But if the Talmud Chacham is not there, it's in another town, and they want to, oh, this great Talmud Chacham died, so then you still don't make the espedim on Chol HaMoed. It's only when he's right there that we make the espedim for him on Chol HaMoed or Chanukah and Purim. More questions. It says, really? Ini? Oh, Rav Kahana, Sapti Rav Zvid Minar Doi Bepum Nara. Rav Kahana gave a big hesped for Rav Zvid from Nar Doi, but not in Nar Doi. He did it in the city of Pum Nara, and this was on Chol HaMoed, and he wasn't there. So how can you tell me it's only Lufanav? Here you see that he did it, even Shalom Lufanav. So how did we answer that up? So on the Rav Papi says, no. Yom Shmuahava. Rav Kahana just heard right then and there about the patira of Rav Zvid of Nardai, and therefore that is like the chibafan of Dami. That's no different than if he was right there and present there. The Yom Shmua is like chibafan of Dami. We dash it further. We dash now a following pasuk that is from a Tosefta in Moed Katan, and the pasuk from Yeshaya. And the pasuk tells us, Ula says, Amar Ula, the pasuk reads as follows, Al Shadayim Sovtim, Al Stei Chemed, Al Gefen Poriyah. And Ula darshens it as follows. Hesped, when we talk the term Hesped, it means Alev. It means that they would go and bang on their chests, beat on their chest. And this is based upon this pasuk. They say, Al Shodayim Sovtim. When they would make the Hesped, they would beat on their chest, on their Shodayim, in the breast. Tipuach, what does that mean? That means they would go and clap their hands together in mourning. Tipuach Biyad. Rashi elsewhere says it's the banging the hands against your thigh. And kilos, we use the terminology kilos, that refers to berega. That's when they would stamp on the ground as a sign of mourning with their feet. So the Brisa says further, Tana Rabbanu Namakales, when somebody does this kilos, this stomping on the ground with your feet is a sign of mourning. So the one who's doing this, Namakales, lo yikales besando. Don't do this while you're wearing a certain type of footwear known as a sandal, elabimino, but make sure you're doing it with a shoe, because it's a sakana, mipnei sakana, that you might hurt yourself if you bang with the sandal. That could lead to you hurting yourself. Rashi explains over here, shehovech hasandal v'shoveraglo, that somehow you would turn over the sandal and you would break your foot. So again, do this in a way that won't lead to damage, won't cause you to hurt yourself. Gemara continues and tells us, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ovel, Kevon, Shenia, Na, Rosho, Shuv, Eminachmin, Rashoim, Leshev, Etzlo. Once the Ovel nods his head, so to say, in other words, he's demonstrating that he's had Nechama, so then you don't continue giving Nechama. We said previously that it's inappropriate to give Nechama after the person already has been Menucham, and therefore it only adds to the problem. So therefore, once the person nods his head, so Rashi says over here, Shenira, Shenicha, Me'atzmo, that he seems to have been comforted, so then don't go and continue giving him comfort. Rashi in the Ksiv Yad adds, Kivon de Menanei Rosh, when you nod your head, Merci, the Piers, Keman de Menucham. So he's gotten his Nechama, and it's inappropriate to go and further go and give him Nechama. Similarly, Rav Yochanan said another din, the three dinim here. There was the first one. Now Rav Yochanan tells us another din. Rav Yochanan, Hakol Chayov Lamo Bibnei Nasi. Everybody has to stand up normally when they're in the presence of the Nasi. The exception being Chutz Me Avel. Somebody's an Avelus, doesn't have to. He's allowed to. He doesn't have to. And the Chola, person who's sick, yeah, but he can't stand up. So obviously he doesn't have to if it's too difficult for him to stand up. And the final member from Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan, Lakol Omrim Lahem Shavu. Normally, the Nasi, after everybody rises from him, you tell them to go sit down. It's appropriate. You have to stay standing up until the Nasi tells you you can sit down. One exception over here is, again, the person who's in Avelus, so he doesn't have to wait. He technically didn't have to stand up, so he doesn't have to wait to be told to sit down. And likewise, if the Chola was able to mount enough strength to get up, so it's difficult for him to stand up, so he can sit down without being told that you're allowed to go and sit down. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, another statement that we have over here is made by Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Avel, the person Nebuch in Avelos, Yom Rishon, the first day, Os Lecho Lecho Mishlo. He doesn't eat. Now, some say this is the entire first day. Others suggest it's only the first meal. In any event, this din is the Suda Savra that we have. Our custom is for the first meal that we send food to the Beis Avel. Again, a lot of people send food all week long. There's a lot of food sent to the Beis Avel, but the minog is the first meal is sent from the outside. Also, lecho lecho mishlo, he doesn't eat his own bread. This is based upon the pasuk from Yecheskel, where Yecheskel is teaching us many of the din of avelos because he was told not to do this, and therefore it implies that every other avel should do this. Midama le'rachmona, Kodesh Baruch Hu told Yecheskel, lechem anoshim lo socha, you do not eat the bread of other people. In other words, you don't practice this din of suda savra like everybody else does, and that teaches us that everybody else does have to go and practice his din, that they shouldn't eat their own bread. They should have people send it to them, and that's the minhag of the suda savra being sent to the base avel. Ma'aseh Shehoya, Rabba and Rav Yosef, Nebuch, they were in Avelus, so Mechalpi Sudasayu La'adade, to fulfill this idea that the Sudas Havro comes from somebody else. So Rabba sent to Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef sent to Rabba. I don't know if it was at the same time or at different times, so this was the way they accomplished this din of the Sudas Havro. Another state from Rehuda Marav, Yom Rehuda Marav, Meis Beir Nebuch, if there's a dead person in the city, so then everybody has to stop doing what they're doing, as Kovin HaMeis, Kovin HaYir, Asur Masiyas Melacha, nobody should do Melacha. Now, Maisa Shahaya, Rav Hamnuna, Ikla de Ramusa, Rav Hamnuna came to a certain city known as the Ramusa, and he saw that people were doing work, even though there was a death in the city. Shoma kol shipura d'shichva. He heard them blowing shofar, which was the way that they would announce that Nebuch, somebody had passed away. But he saw that people were still working. Chaza hanoch inshe, he saw these people, they were doing the work. They didn't stop doing the work. Amalu, he said to them, what are you doing? I'm putting you in shanta because you're not going and following this din that if somebody, Nebuch, there's a dead person in the city, kol b'nei yira, suv masis malacha. So he put him to chayrim. Levi hanoch inshe b'shamta. He put him into shamta. And he said, "Lo shich vo ikav masa." Isn't there a dead person in the town? And it's also to do malacha when there's a dead person in the town. So what are these people doing? They were eruch of good people. So they told Rav Amnuna, "No, in our town we have a chaver kaddisha, chavurasa ikav masa, and they take care of it. The whole purpose is that you're not supposed to do work in the city, so that nobody should lie Nebuch dead and nobody's taking care of him. But we have a chaver kaddisha that's assigned to do that, and therefore we're allowed to work because the chaver kaddisha is taking care of everything. Chavurasa ikav masa, and therefore that's why we're working." So Rav Amnuna said that they're correct. Amalu. So he told these people, "Okay, if that's the case, yahachi shar luchu. So then I'm releasing you from." You're being in this shamta, you're no longer shamta. Or they say, okay, they're good, hey, go ahead and do work, it's not a problem. Another memra from Rav Yehuda Marav, Yomer Rav Yehuda Marav, call miskash al meis yosem idai, a meis acher ubocher, rachmona litzlan, if somebody is excessively mourning over a Nebuch, the person that they lost, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make, if you want to mourn, I'll give you something to mourn about, you'll Nebuch have to go and cry over another meis in your family. And meis shahoya, hawi issa, there once was a certain woman, the havas b'shiv vusi, the Rav Huna, who lived in the neighborhood of Rav Huna, and Nebuch, she had seven children, and one of them died, havalo shiva, banu meis chad minayi, one of the seven children died and she was inconsolable. Hava kobachya biseirasa ale, and she cried and cried and cried excessively for this child that never passed away. But that's not the right way to act. One should do tzedek hadin and understand that this comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Sholach Rav Huna sent to him and he said, "Lo tavidi hachi, you got to stop. It's inappropriate what you're doing. It's excessive. It's a pathological mourning. You're not doing the right thing, and you're basically being kofar and saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't run the show." But she never didn't listen to him. So he sent her again. He said, "Listen, itzayis mutav. If you listen to me, fine. But Nebuch, if you don't, vilo. If you don't listen, tzavis zavdita liidach. You're never going to have to go get more tachrichim. You're going to go have to arrange more tachrichim. It's going to be a terrible thing for you." Rashi the Siv Yad says zavdisa. It means tzeda lemeis tachrichim. It means the food for the mace. In other words, you get tachrichim for the mace. So it's a terrible thing. And Nebuch, that's what happened. This, another one of her sons died. And then she kept on crying and crying and crying. And Nebuch, umesukulu, all of them died. Ultimately, she continued to excessively, inappropriately mourn. Lesof amala. So Rav Huna said to her, "Listen, timush zavdisa l'navshech. You're going to have to go get beru shratza yourself if you keep this up. You're basically being kofar against HaKadosh Baruch Hu." And Nebuch, that's what happened. Umes, and she ended up dying herself. Now, this sad, tragic story requires more understanding. Rashi the Ksiv Yad writes down that if the person does this excessive suffering and mourning, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the suffering will consume you, and then you're never going to die. And the Nimuke Yosef adds that what she did was she formally prolonged the Shiva longer than you're allowed. So she extended what Chazal said, or the appropriate Shiva and Shloshim, and that's why she was punished. Ritva says, this basically says she's going against Hashem's decree, like I said, and therefore it's being kofar. And the Ein Yaakov brings down the famous Gemara in Tainis, where Klai Yisrael and Nebuch listened to the words in Meraglim, and HaKadosh Baruch said, "You cried for nothing, I'll give you something to cry about." And that's Tisha B'Av, and this woman was basically being excessively inappropriately, and again, she obviously had the ability to stop this. HaKadosh Baruch wouldn't punish her if this was something that she couldn't control, but she could have controlled it, she chose not to, and that's why Nebuch, she was punished. The Rif and then Yaakov points out that we learn from Avram Avinu, when it says he came lispod lisarav livkosa, that the letter chaf and the word livkosa is written in smaller letters to show that there has to be a diminution over time. And that's why we have Chazal set up that the earlier part of the Shiva is a stronger morning, then a lesser morning in the Shiva, then the Shloshim, and then the Yud Beis Chodesh. There's a diminution in the morning to give you a chance to accept the Kodesh Baruch Hu's din. Finally, why didn't she get the message after Nebuch, the first, second, third child died? So it said over the name of Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal, a similar idea with the Makkah and Mitzrayim. Why didn't they stop hitting the frog? Every time they hit the frog multiplied, it doubled. So, no, first time it doubles, okay, you got two, then four, then eight. So, no, stop, at eight, it turns to 16. So, realize, you hit it again, it's going to turn to 32. Why didn't they stop? So, the answer is that this is human nature. When we are so caught up in something, we don't look at the obvious facts. This woman didn't see the obvious thing in front of her, that her mourning was causing her trouble. And that's why Rav Huna so kindly and carefully warned her, what you're doing is wrong. And therefore, she didn't understand this. And Nebuch, that's the terrible tragedy. If you want to see more about this, you can look at my Sefer Women in the Talmud, where I discuss this in some detail. Now, the Gemara explains a little bit of what I just said outside. The Gemara now says, Al tivku l'meis v'al tenudu lo. It brings down the pasuk from Yirmiyahu. The whole pasuk says, Al tivku l'meis v'al tenudu lo b'chu b'cho l'haulech, ki lo yeshuvot, v'ro'as eretz b'latzo. So this pasuk is telling us the proper way that we should mourn. So we dash in the pasuk. It says, Al tivku l'meis, don't go and cry yosemidai, excessively. V'al tenudu lo, what does that mean? Yosemi kashir, more than the measure that you're supposed to go. How is this? Shlosh yom l'vuchi, the first 3 days, as I mentioned, the avelos are a stronger period of time, that's for crying. And then shiva l'hesped, then we have the 7 days, the rest of the shiva, that's for the hespedim. Like I said, l'spod, l'sara, l'livkosa. So then there's a diminution over the period of the shiva. There are halacha l'maisa, differences in the first 3 days versus the last 4 days of the shiva. Ushloshim, then you have a period of time of the 30 days. That's legiyutz l'tisporos. You're not allowed to do certain things with laundering. Again, today, the minhag is that we don't do these practices because we're more of an istinus, we're more of a fussy people. Our hygiene is different. It would be intolerable for us to not do the laundry. However, tisporos, not taking a haircut, not shaving, that we are no way to do, of course. And for a parent, even more than the 30 days, until people are garimbo, as we learned previously. After the shloshim, you can't ve'elich. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you got to get on with your life. I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yetem rachmanim yibo yosim yimeni. You can't be more compassionate, so to say, than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that this is the period of time to mourn properly. Beyond that, that's basically being kofar against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like we brought down from the Ritva. Then the Pasuk said, Bilchu b'cho la'olech. What does that mean? You should go and cry. So I'm a Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda says, la'olech b'lo banim. This is especially for somebody in Nebuch who left this world and did not have children. Rav Yishuv and Levi did not normally go to houses of Shiva, but he bedafka would go to a house of a Shiva for somebody Nebuch that died without having children. Because Dichsiv, he says, the Pasuk says, this Pasuk from Yirmiyah, Bechu b'chol aholech kilo yashavot v'ro'as eres v'lato. It means they won't come back to see the land of where they were born, meaning that he has no children that will go and continue to carry on after his life. There's an interesting mice of the Chazon Ish. It was asked to Paskin in Eretz Yisrael. The Tzal had to go out on a very dangerous mission, and there were people that were volunteering. And in this specific case, there was a 30-year-old married person who had children, and there was a 19-year-old not yet married person, obviously didn't have children. They were each equally qualified to go and do this askonus that they had to do in the army. And the Chazon Ish Paskin, the Loch Lamaisa, you send the 30-year-old father who has children, because he was already Makai in the midst of Puravu. And this pasuk teaches us the importance of carrying on a legacy, having children after you. And Nebuch, the 19-year-old, in the case that the Chazon Ish was asked, had not yet been Makai in the midst of Puravu. So somewhat paradoxically, many of us would have said to have the 19-year-old go. Chazon Ish, in his great wisdom, said, no, you have the person who's married and is Makai in the midst of Puravu, let him be the one to go. And Rachmon Litzan, it's a dangerous mission. And Nebuch, he doesn't come back. At least, to some level, there's a consolation that he has a legacy to carry on after. Rav Huda dashed in this pasuk a little bit differently. Rav Huda Amar, Zeh Sha'avar Aveira B'Shanaba. He says this pasuk is referring to Lo Yoshev Od, means a person that did an Aveira, and then he repeats it, because that leads to a person becoming accustomed to doing this Aveira, as Rav Huda himself said, Rav Huda L'Tamei, Dem Rav Huda, Kivin Sha'avar Odom Aveira B'Shanaba, Huchula. When a person does an Aveira, repeats the Aveira, does it multiple times, so then it becomes as if it's a mitzvah to him, it's hutulo, it's permitted to him. Or Christ, this really, he thinks it's permitted to him. Hutulo, so could I? The Gemara says, of course not. Ela ema, nasilok at this. Since he's done it so often, he doesn't consider it anymore a sin. He says, oh, it's just a chumra not to do this, it's just something else. It's already accepted for him to do this. A person repeats averas over and over again, they become to him like a mitzvah. Then we have Amar Rav Levi. Rav Levi says, Avel shloshi yomim rishon yiras atzmo kilu cheru munachas lo ben shtei yirech osav. Through the first 3 days of the Avelus process, so a person should realize there's a kitrug on him and his family, and he should view it as if there is a cheruv, a sword, that is next to his thighs, ben shtei yirech osav, in between his thighs, so to say. And the Shlosha Ad Shiva, from the next 3 days, of the end of the Shiva, from day 4 through day 7, Mishlosha Ad Shiva, so then the sword is a little bit removed. It's in the corner of the room, but it's still there. For the rest of the Shloshim and for the rest of the Yud Beis Chodesh, so then a person should view that sword is still being there. There's a certain kitrug on the family, and the person should be aware of this and try to do tshuva and have that in mind. Finally, the Mishnah said, "V'lo shel noshim li'olam b'nei kavod." We don't have ever the beer, B-I-E-R, of the woman put down on the street because of the kavod that some of the women in either childbirth or they were menstruating would be dripping blood, and this would be a busha to them. So we don't do this for any women. So Amrin Ardai, they said in Ardai, "Lo shanu." They originally said this din. We turn to Chochesam and Aleph. Elachaya, a woman who died Nebuch during childbirth. But for the rest of the women, Avashar Noshim and Nichim, there's no problem because they're not going to have such a discharge of blood. However, Rabbeleza disagreed. Rabbeleza might know, Afilu Shar Noshim, they'll say, because the Pasuk says, Atomer Shom Miriam, Atikavar Shom, Samuch Lemiso Kvura, that you go and bury right away. And they didn't, in that situation, in any way delay the burial by putting her beer out there to have the eulogies, and it's not covered for a woman in that situation, and this was for all women, not only the women that Nebuch died in childbirth or that were dying in Nida. Mitzvah Hashem, this introduced us to the death of Miriam, which was on Yud Nisan, and was a tremendous loss for Klai Yisrael. We'll discuss more about this in Mitzvah Hashem at the beginning of tomorrow's Shir. With this, we conclude today's Shir.